Welcome to the Astral Projection Astral Podcast, brought to you by Ali Wiley. Hello everyone. When we leave our bodies, we often come across other incarnations. Today, I have Heidi Scary with me to talk about her book, Red Willow's Quest, and how it relates to one of her own past lives or other incarnations. Heidi Scary is a writer and storyteller who has taught classes and workshops on writing and spoken on television and radio. She has studied in the mind, body and spirit field for 38 years. Hello Heidi, I read your book on the beach in the summer, Red Willow's Quest. Excellent book, very entertaining. I'll try not to give away too much of the story. So if I start talking too much, just tell me to shut up. Okay, Red Willow's Quest. Can you just tell me something about the title of the book? The word quest, how does that fall in with the meaning of the book, the message, etc., etc.?
Well, the story itself is really a parable for a person trying to find their spiritual meaning or mission in life, their quest in life. And the main character, you know, sets out on a quest to grow spiritually and actually to try to become a medicine woman.
I like the word quest because I think we're all on our own quest, aren't we?
Yes.
And I think once we find that quest, once we feel that we have that quest within us, like Red Willow, you have to follow that path. Do you agree?
Yeah, there's an inner drive. And in this case, you know, she even has to go against her tribe and what they would prefer that she stay there and be like a regular, you know, woman or mother, get married. And she has this drive, the spiritual drive. And I think we all, to some degree or another, have it. We're trying to figure out the meaning of the life. Is there something greater? Are we here just to go to work and have children? Or is there a bigger spiritual purpose behind that? And what is it? And that's the discovery that she's on.
Yes, I agree. Also, sometimes it can be difficult to follow that inner drive when sometimes it takes you away from people that you love or people that you want to be with, that you feel you should be with. And yet this quest takes you in the opposite direction. Sometimes it's a difficult thing to follow, isn't it?
Yes, and you see that a lot in the book where she's struggling against what the people of her village, especially her aunt, and they sort of gossiped about because she's doing something different than what is accepted. And I think a lot of women have many times struggled with that because there's this role in society that women are supposed to, you know, get married and have kids, even though that's starting to break down nowadays. Women still have that struggle.
Yes, I think even though it's set in, quite a way in the past, I think the sentiments are still valid today, which just shows you that some things don't disappear just because they're in the past. And talking about the past, is it based on past life, one of your other incarnations?
When I first started writing the book, I thought I was writing a fantasy because that was fantasy, science fiction was what I had written some other books in. But as I kept writing, I kept going, well, this is really like a Native American culture. So then I got just a couple pages of a manuscript from a friend about that she asked me to read. And I read just the first page, and it was about a woman who remembered her past life as a Native American. And then I had to take my daughter someplace. So I got up and I walked outside, and I found a hawk feather in the yard, and it was just standing upright, and it was in perfect condition.
Wow.
The next day, I found another hawk feather in the yard, again in perfect condition, and the third day, I found another. The number three has a lot of spiritual significance, being, you know, anything that comes in threes, it's a powerful symbol, the hawk. And so that to me was, yes, you need to be writing this as Native American. And I was a few chapters in, so I needed to start over and go back and do that. And then I went to a talk given by a spiritual leader, and he said the cry of the hawk means clear spiritual vision. So that again reinforced what I was feeling, that I should be doing it as my own past life as Native American.
Wow, that's really interesting. Also, this is a strange thing that happened. While this week, while we've been arranging this this interview, my husband actually found a hawk's wing, like the whole wing. Uh-huh. How often do you find a whole wing of a hawk? And I've still got it downstairs. I don't know, maybe the bird hit a car or something like that, and the wing has totally broken off. And my husband found it when he took the dog for a walk one day. And that was that's quite synchronistic, isn't it?
Yeah, quite powerful symbol.
Yeah. I often think that when we write things, we put a lot of ourselves in there. Sometimes we don't even realise how much of ourselves we put in a book. How much of yourself is actually in the book? Or what did you learn about yourself while you were writing the book?
You have to put a lot of yourself into it to bring the reader in. But I think as far as what I learned about it or learned about myself is, you know, partly that I've been on a spiritual quest a long time, that we're immortal. Sometimes when things seem hard now, I go, whoa, that's nothing compared to traveling through the wilderness by yourself with wild animals and everything else, and enemies killing people in your tribe. So it sort of puts things into perspective that we're here for a greater reason and we're here many times.
Do you think it's necessary to remember all our past lives or only some of them, maybe just the ones that we can learn from?
Yeah, we live thousands and thousands of times, so there's no reason to remember all of them. It would actually be confusing and not helpful. In fact, when we're born, the veil is put over so that we can focus on this life. And the only value past lives have is how they impact this life. And kind of has to do with karma and reincarnation, that every cause has an effect and every action has a reaction. So a lot of the things that we did in the past already resolved, so there's no reason to revisit them. But the ones that are, maybe there's something there we still need to learn from, or there's some important spiritual reason for us to remember them in this life, maybe a connection with somebody in this life or a connection with a place, something that's left undone that we have to finish off, those would be the lifetimes that we want to try to remember. You know, like you could have a physical pain in your arm or something and recall a past life where you were actually stabbed. And by remembering that, it can help you heal from that stabbing just by knowing that. Or a fear of heights, or bridges, or whatever your fear is, all that fear of fire. You could have been killed in a fire in another life, fear of snakes, died of a snake bite, that sort of thing. And usually just by remembering helps it to unravel, so you lose that fear.
Yeah, because often we have strange fears, don't we, that we haven't got an idea where did that come from. You try and remember a time in your life that could have produced that sort of fear and you don't have a clue. So many of the things indeed that we deal with in this life may well be related to a past life. So obviously remembering that past life and the reason behind it can help us heal from that particular issue that we might have. So how have you managed to remember this particular past life anyway, through dreams, through sensations, because sometimes you can have sensations when you go to a place, you feel like you've been there before.
Things sort of came together when I consciously remembered the past life. But when I was a little girl, every year my family would go west, drive west. We were in Minnesota, and they would drive through the Rocky Mountains, and we would camp in the Rocky Mountains, and that's where the story takes place, where my past life was. And to me, it was always sort of like coming home. And Minnesota's really flat. I need to see the mountains periodically. I can't just go forever without seeing the mountains, because when you live among the mountains, they're like these centennials and they're always around you. And it just seems strange to be in a place that's flat. So you have these recognitions before you actually then remember the lifetime.
Yeah, it kind of feels like home. The mountains feel like home for you.
Yeah, and of course you don't understand that as a conscious, I didn't as a child on a conscious level. I just knew They can come through past lives in many different ways. Sometimes I see full visions, sometimes they're dreams. Sometimes I put my attention on it because I knew this person and I was trying to figure out, well, why do I have this strong connection with the person? And I put a lot of attention on that, focusing within and contemplating on it. And then I had a series of, all I can say is visions while I was wide awake, of different scenes from that lifetime where I was married to him during the Renaissance period. And it was a happy lifetime. It wasn't like there was karma to work off from that life. They really come in different ways, these past life memories. And it's like putting together, I think, pieces to a puzzle where you see these different pieces. They may not be in order. But one of the interesting things about this life is when I wrote it as fantasy, I called the other tribe she meets Kootenai. Uh-huh. And I thought I was making up the word. But when I went out west, I was in when doing research for this book, I went to the Rocky Mountains and I found a book in a bookstore, a children's book with a Native American girl on the cover. And I bought it and I got in the car with the kids and I turned it over. And here it was about a Kootenai Indian girl. Oh, and it was spelled exactly how I had spelled it in my book. So it was just another confirmation that this was my own past life. And the customs of those people were the same. I got a hold of a elder in the tribe and of the Kootenai Indians and talked to him because at the time there's very, very little that was published about the Kootenai Indians, which are... They're kind of up in northern Montana, Washington, and up into Canada.
Wow, but that was one of those wow moments when you saw that Kootenai written down. So if anybody wanted to have a go at remembering a past life or past lives, have you got any tips? You know, what could they do?
First of all, you have to be in tune with yourself and your own intuition so that you're paying attention to your feelings and your instincts and what your dreams are telling you. Like by recording dreams in a journal. So some of the things that might trigger it would be historical movies. If you saw Out of Africa and you had a relation, you know, you felt strongly about Africa, or if you see a movie about the Titanic and you go, oh yeah, that's not good. I don't know. I think I probably drowned in a ship, maybe even the Titanic. Or you see a movie about the Holocaust and the Jews and the concentration camps, that may trigger a memory for you and to pay attention to that. Visiting museums, even visiting like sites where they had these concentration camps, although that might not be a memory I'd want. For me, it's like reading historical books. Actual travel is fabulous. But if you can't afford to travel, looking at books of other countries, going to museums, especially exhibits that come here. Like I did a book on past lifetime as a Viking, and there was a wonderful Viking exhibit here.
Wow.
So that, you know, that can help you trigger those memories and what life was like and that sort of thing.
Do you think it's possible that we can tune into possible future lives as well? Because often we talk about past lives, but we don't often talk about future lives. But if it is, as they say, like everything is now, then it could be even possible to reach possible future lives. I don't say our future lives because I don't believe that the future is set, but I do believe that there are probabilities or possibilities. I don't know. Do you think about that? Do you think that's possible?
It's possible. My goal is kind of to not be reincarnated here, which is another part of the picture we really haven't talked about, is that eventually this cycle of reincarnation, when we spiritually wake up and become God realized, or even before that, as we become more conscious of ourselves as soul, we don't need to continue to be reincarnated on the physical. But maybe you would have glimpses of what the other worlds would be like and what your life might be. Future life or future people might be like in those worlds, because this isn't the only world. There's a whole series like of inner worlds on lots of different levels. Some of them are still positive and negative, and some of them you move into the pure positive God worlds.
Mm-hmm, definitely. I mean, there is so much out there. I think if we try to fit it all into one little human brain, that little human brain might even explode. Anyway, we've talked about how remembering a past life can help with your current life. how has writing this book helped you particularly with your current life in the sense of growing spiritually? Maybe even writing this book even helped her, Red Willow, because I do believe there is a passing of energy also between different lives.
I like to think that we are soul, not we have a soul, mm-hmm. that we are soul, our true higher consciousness, and that true higher consciousness, that is what's over us in each lifetime. So that is the part of us that's consistent as we change lifetimes and change personalities. And when we die, that's the part of us that lives, is that soul part of us. And as you say, everything's in the now. But again, it gets kind of mind-boggling.
Exactly.
to try to think of all that. The fact that remembering this past life, it wasn't just this life, but a series of past lives that I've actually remembered, and it just helps you know that you're on this journey, and each lifetime you're learning something about yourself. You're learning some aspect of yourself that you need to work on, and eventually you become a complete, strong, spiritual person. In that lifetime, I learned a lot about courage and dedication to a quest and believing in myself, following my inner guidance, looking to an inner master, learning how to meditate, learning to not listen to gossip and outside sources, but letting my own inner guidance be what guided me through life.
Yeah. Animals are very significant in the story as guides, as they were for the Native Americans. Animals were very important, and that comes out in the book as well. You mentioned about the hawk's feather that you found. Can you just explain the significance of the animals in Red Willow's quest?
One of the main characters in the book is Red Willow's dog-wolf companion. He's half dog, half wolf, mm-hmm. and they travel together. He protects her, comforts her, and even almost sacrifices his life for her. I believe animals are soul too. Mm-hmm. Eventually, they will take on the human consciousness that we've all been as soul animals as well. I don't believe in regression, that we go back to being an animal mm-hmm. from the human form, that there's sort of a progression. Not that we're better than animals, because animals can be more loyal, dedicated, and loving than some humans I know.
yeah.
So not saying that, you know, we're superior, it's just a different life experience and part of the progression as we're growing spiritually. So in the book, there's buffaloes, there's mountain lion, there's hawks, and to the Native Americans, they were very much part of their life. When you're living in nature, life is so completely different. You're so attuned, as I say, to the mountains, to the wind, weather, the animals, and there's no separation. So they're very much a part of life. And for her, she would see these animals and she would always be looking for, well, why has this happened? Why has this animal come to me? What is he trying to teach me? Show me. And whereas the man she was traveling with might want to just, oh, well, this mountain lion is dangerous, let's shoot him. She's going, no, you know, there's a spiritual reason for him being here. I'm on this quest and this animal's here trying to teach me something.
Wow. Well, I hope I don't meet a mountain lion. It'd be a bit difficult in the middle of Italy. I might meet a bear or something. I enjoyed your book as a, let's say, a middle-aged English woman. Who else would you recommend the book to? What age group, or male, female, who do you think it's suitable for?
I hadn't written it as a young adult book, but the heroine is 16. And the young heroine is, because people back then didn't live as long, and you were a woman at 16 with full responsibilities. You might be married, you might have children. But one of the first readers for the book, when it was, you know, people started doing review, was a young woman, a young high school student, who did a review with Bloomsbury Review, which is well known here in the States. So that made me realize that there was this whole crowd of young adults, especially women, that would like this book. And the neighbor girl actually did a review on it, and I did a workshop with a mother-daughter group. And so I found that both, of course, the mothers and the daughters enjoyed it. But then I've had a lot of men that have liked it because they like the adventure. There's a lot of adventure in the book. There's war, the fighting between the tribes, with the tension with the white men, all these different elements, spiritual elements. So,
also people with a general interest in Native American life as well.
Oh yeah, and you know, Native American and that like history, and people who are fascinated with past lives would enjoy for that aspect alone. But I found a lot of people, they would read the book and they would say, yes, I had a past life as a Native American. And it makes sense. We as white men have only been here, a couple hundred years, and the Native Americans were for thousands of times. So probably we were all Native Americans at some past life.
Yes, that's true. I think we tend to get too bogged down in who we are, who we see in the mirror, this face that we see in the mirror, instead of thinking, well, we've only been here for not that long, really, considering how long the Native Americans were around. Of course, their story is tragic in the end. They're such a beautiful people, so in touch with nature. I don't want to ruin the story because it's all part of the book. It was tragic, some of the things that happened due to the white man going there and taking their land.
Every culture you look at, it just seems to be what man does. Whether you're talking about Australia and the natives there, or even in Africa, it seems like that's the fate of the natives, that people more advanced technologically, civilization, certainly in South America and Mexico, the same thing that happened, you know, in the United States and Canada. It is tragic, but you know, there's always a spiritual reason behind that too. History is not about somebody else. It's our history. It's our experiences. Probably many of us came in as baby boomers were killed in World War II. Mm-hmm. You know, history is about us. And of course, that makes it a lot more interesting when you look at it from that aspect. You've probably been in Africa. You've had a lifetime in India. You've had, you know, there's just about nothing, because your soul has to have an experience in all these different countries or even on other planets to grow spiritually, to get all the lessons that they need.
Yes, I think maybe if we had this attitude and we looked at history with more in this way, maybe our world would be better, because we tend to look at history as if it's nothing to do with us. They did it. I think often that's the attitude we have. They did it. It's not our fault. So obviously, if you believe in reincarnation, you have to take responsibility for the history, because we did it. Obviously, people that don't believe in reincarnation tend to place the blame outside of themselves, let's say responsibility. So really, you know, we should take responsibility for history as well, instead of placing it outside of ourselves, because I think once we do that, also it means taking responsibility for who we are and going forward from that.
If you realize that you're probably going to be coming back, or there's a good chance, you want to use up all the natural resources? Do you want to pollute the ocean? This is your life we're talking about.
I think if more people looked at life in that way, it might give people an added drive to make things better, to really make an effort to make things better. Because it's almost as if you know, we try to brush things under the carpet because, oh, well, I won't be here, we won't be here. But the thing is, we will. We might not have this face. We might be an opposite sex, but we'll be here.
Native Americans, of course, they didn't look necessarily all the tribes. Some did and some didn't at reincarnation. But they did look at the earth as sacred, had a great respect for animals. They killed an animal to eat. They would give thanks for that animal's life. They would use all parts of the body. I think that's not to say they were perfect, because they did slash and burn some of them too. I mean, it's not that they were better than us. They were learning too. But they did have, in fact, people have said to me, well, you kind of look at ownership like the Native Americans. My husband and I live on an acre of land, but I don't consider that mine. I consider myself, I'm a caretaker, I'm staying here for a while, but I share it with the deer that come through and the rabbits and the woodchucks and all of God's creatures, the birds, the insects, and I'm going to be here for a period of time, and then I'll move on and this land will still be here. So maybe that came from my past life, but we're just caretakers, and we want to leave this world a better place than we found it. And I think, and we want to leave every situation, everything we do in life, every encounter we have with another person, we want to leave them feeling more uplifted. Smiling at somebody can make a difference in their day.
Yes, you just don't know how much difference your words or your expression are going to make to somebody else. Maybe someone's feeling a bit down in the morning, just a nice hello can make such a difference, like reaching out. So how would our audience purchase a copy of Red Willow's Quest? Do you have a website where they can go and have a look?
BlueStarVisions.com, or they can just type in Heidi Scary, Heidi.Scary.com, or just type in Heidi Scary and all these things will come up and they can see the official website. It's also on Amazon. They have some used copies, so...
Great. Other books? Have you got any on it? You mentioned something about a Viking life.
Yeah, another book that I'm in the process of trying to get published that's about a lifetime during the Viking era, where I was a young English woman and I was captured off the coast in one of the Vikings' first raids. When I was remembering that past lifetime as a Viking, I even went to England and to Norway, investigated it, and found out where I'd actually lived. And they had a reconstructed Anglo-Saxon village in England. And in Norway, we actually found where I lived on the West Coast, because I just knew where I lived. And we took ferries and rented a car and got over and looked in the fjords to find that place.
Wow, that is absolutely fascinating. I have to tell me when you've got that one published, because I've always had a fascination for the Viking period. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I suppose it's so
fascinating culture.
A bit violent though, weren't they? A bit violent.
It was a violent time period. Very violent, and the story is more violent than Red Willow's Quest. Although Red Willow's Quest isn't that pretty in places. They have some more in there too. But this is certainly, it was a very challenging time period. But also, the Vikings were pretty amazing when you consider how they changed the world, how extensively they traveled. The story actually goes into the area that's now Russia as she gets sold into slavery and taken to another part of, she's going to be sold to the Arabs, and she actually gets taken through the Vikings there were not coming in as pirates, but they were actually traders. And there was major trade routes that came about because of the Vikings. And they actually settled in the United States. They had villages here and intermarried somewhat with the Native Americans before Christopher Columbus came. So that's, they were pretty significant.
They got around, didn't they?
Yeah, they got around.
I mean, the things that they used to get up to as well, probably all of us have got a little bit of Viking blood in us. Because if they travel so much with rape and pillage and all the rest of it, who knows? Really, all of us are a real mix of everything. I think if we really could go back and back and back, I think we'd find out that really we're just a mishmash of all sorts of different races. And, I think it's wonderful. So just changing the subject a little, can you just tell me about your background in the mind, body and spirit field? What have you done? I know that you've been on television and radio.
I have been studying spiritual and esoteric topics since the early 70s. And I have spoken on spiritual topics, done a lot of workshops. In fact, I'm doing a couple on past lives in this area coming up I did one this month, but I've got three coming up next month. So I keep pretty active in the spiritual topics, sharing what I know about past lives and dreams and out of the body travel, which we call soul travel, which is sort of a higher level of out of the body travel, shifting your consciousness into a higher level. And so I've really been very fascinated by this field and made it a long lifetime study in my adult life.
Wow. When did you begin getting interested in spiritual kind of stuff? When you were a teenager, in your early 20s?
I was raised Episcopalian. I was from an English background, so my parents were Episcopalian. Mm-hmm. But when I left home, I even went to Episcopal girls' school my senior year of high school. But when I went off to college, that was sort of my spiritual time period of searching, looking for God, looking for some kind of spiritual reason. Christianity did not answer for me. And so I was on an active spiritual quest, so to speak. And my friends actually knew I was on this spiritual quest. And I tried various things, studied various things. And eventually, actually, the teaching that I'm in is called Ekankar. And eventually, the headquarters even came to Minnesota, which was quite a treat for me.
Okay, well, thanks for talking to us today, Heidi. We'll have to do it again sometime. When your next book comes out, I'll get a copy and we can talk about that. I'm really looking forward to that. So let me know when it comes out, won't you?
Okay, well, thank you, Ali. It's been great talking to you.
Hello to Minnesota, and enjoy the rest of the day because it's morning there, isn't it?
Yes, the day is just beginning.
Well, okay then. Well, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Cheerio.
Remember, if you would like to share in Red Willow's quest, the book is available from bluestarvisions.com and is also available from Amazon. Thanks for listening. Happy travels.